is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It's a great pleasure to continue my conversation with Professor Eugene Finkel, who teaches at Johns Hopkins. His new book is Intent to Destroy, Russia's 200-year quest to dominate Ukraine. It is now 2021. The pandemic is gripping the earth. There's fear everywhere, especially by seniors, that the pandemic is coming for them. One of those seniors is a man named Vladimir Putin. He's isolated in 2020 and 2021. You can all remember those long tables where he would entertain people 30 feet away from him. Well, during that period of relative isolation, he had few visitors. He read a lot of history, I learned from Professor Eugene Finkel's book, Intent to Destroy, and wrote a version of Ukraine and Russia that was published immediately in 21. Surprisingly similar to opinions that he's had ever since. It's important to look at that document, not because it's beautifully written, but because it contains myths that we've now very carefully said were not accurate. And he could have learned they were not accurate at the time, but he chose not to. Professor, that essay, it's revelatory, thanks to my reading of your book beforehand. Is that something that other world leaders know, that Vladimir Putin has a myth in mind when he talks about Ukraine?
So, you know, it's a great question. What goes on in this person's brain? I wouldn't go there. You know, it's a very dark place. But that's a, but what we know by then, by 2021, that he's definitely expansionist. He's definitely revisionist. He wants to bring Russia back to its status as a great power. He definitely thinks about Crimea as part of Russia. That's why Russia invades Crimea in 2014, and he annexes Crimea in 2014. But what his end goals are, nobody knows. And this essay that he wrote in isolation during the COVID pandemic is to a large degree a revelation of his ideas about what Ukraine. Now, you know, it's presumably it's a historical document. Had it been submitted to me by one of my students, I would have probably failed it because it's based on myth upon myth that has little to do with actual fact. But that's how Putin views Ukraine. He uses the same stories, the same, you know, perceptions of what Ukraine is, that Ukraine is Russia, that Ukraine has always been Russia, that those people on the ground in Ukraine are essentially Russians. And when, you know, a powerful person become a wannabe historian, it's very dangerous. But that's what we see with Putin when he decides that it's time to make his myths a reality. And that's when we probably for the first time started saying that something is going on, that he means something bigger than just Crimea. What it is, absolutely unclear. Does he want the entire Ukraine? Does he really mean it? You know, and that's probably something that experts on Russia should talk among ourselves about Putin, because we always saw Russia as violent, corrupt, but also utterly cynical. Right. The perception among many people, no, he doesn't really mean it. Right. He's not expansionist. He wouldn't go to war. Just, you know, an exercise in coercion. But apparently he was screaming at us. Yes, I mean it. I want to take Ukraine. I want to turn Russia into empire again. And we were not listening until then. So his vision in this article is very simple. Ukrainians are Russians. Ukraine is originally Russia, and any future of Ukraine should be with Russia, not necessarily annexed, but fully subordinated to Russia, something like a client state, but nothing less than that. Ukrainians should not have the choice to make their own decisions.
Why this is important, you will note in the news, that the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists have moved the clock to zero, closer to midnight than it's ever been, even during the first Cold War. That means that They understand, as many do, I speak with them routinely, think tanks and military and governmental officials, both sides of the Atlantic, NATO, EU. Everyone is fearful that what's gone on for 3 years can easily turn into a nuclear exchange. That's why it matters what Vladimir Putin thought in 2021. We go back to 2014, February and March of 2014, when Russia moved the little green men into the Crimea Peninsula. I see now, thanks to the professor's book, that was a profound moment for Putin. That was high risk. And the answer was not much. And Professor, there's a puzzle for me. The Ukrainians themselves, did they understand the move to Crimea was a move against Kyiv? Or did they think this is part of the Russian state that Khrushchev made a mistake giving away? How did Kyiv perceive what happened in 2014?
Well, 2014 was not just Crimea, but just to, you know, to explain what was going on. Soviet Union collapses and Ukraine and Russia become independent state. But even back then, most Russians do not perceive Ukraine as a real state. So one of my favorite anecdotes is even a couple of years after that, in mid-1990s, Russian diplomats in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs telling, you know, diplomats in Western foreign ministry not to open embassies in Kyiv because, you know, Ukraine is about to join Russia and it will be just too big of a building for a consulate. So don't even bother. So they, so officially Ukraine and Russia independent state, but Russian mindset remains the same. Both suffer immensely economically. But eventually, in terms of regime and politics, they start going separate ways. Under Putin, Russia becomes increasingly authoritarian. Ukraine has several authoritarian attempts by wannabe autocrats to establish themselves, and Ukrainians rise against those attempts in revolutions. And in 2014, we have one of those attempts when the Ukrainian president, Viktor Yanukovych, who is extremely corrupt, you know, quite violent, not very capable, decides that the future of Ukraine is not with Europe, but with Russia. And the reaction of the Ukrainian society is no, we want to be with Europe. We belong to Europe. There is a popular uprising, quite violent uprising against Yanukovych in Kyiv, the Euromaidan. Yanukovych flees Ukraine, is deposed by the parliament. And for Putin, that's the moment when he realizes that he will no longer be able to control Ukraine through proxies. So it's either now or never. And for him, the key prize is Crimea and Eastern Ukraine. So that's why those little green men appear in Crimea. Ukraine is going west, so we need to take what we can before it's too late. And Eastern Ukraine, the coal mine and the industrial areas of the Donbas, where people affiliated with the Russian security services start moving in and fomenting an uprising against the government in Kyiv, which, you know, just came to power after a revolution. It's disorganized. It's extremely weak. Ukraine doesn't really have a military. It has been hollowed out by Yanukovych and people around him. So from the Ukrainian perspective, yes, it's definitely an invasion. They're just too weak to respond.
And Donetsk and Luhansk, the two oblasts that the Russian agents pretend are independent movements. At the time, I remember reporting on this because it's so fresh in my mind. It was a confusion. I was told repeatedly, they all speak Russian. They watch Russian media. They watch Moscow. They vacation, they're intermarried with Russians, they're not Ukrainians. I knew that that was not accurate, but I didn't have anything to respond to. I mean, I didn't have any facts to respond to it. Is Luhansk and Donetsk in particular, and Zaporizhia to an extent, are they dominated by let's be Russian? Is that how they talk about themselves?
No, absolutely not. Right, after, so many people talk about language, but in this context, language is meaningless because language is a result of many decades of forced Russification. And essentially everyone in Ukraine speaks Russian or bilingual. language does not determine your, you know, national affiliation or your priorities. After all, many people speak English, but that doesn't mean that we're all British. So what happens in those regions? Yes, it's they speak Russian, but they still consider themselves Ukrainians. They want better relations with Russia, but very few people there actually want to become Russian. They would rather be in a prosperous, independent Ukraine that does respect their rights, that does allow them to speak the Russian language, to have their culture, but they do not want to be ruled by Putin and his mafia. So what happens is, but there is also a small group of people who do want, the Russian nationalists who do want to join Russia, and they start protesting against the new government. But they're small, they're disorganized. The government is, after it gets the act together, is able to put most of those protests down, with the exception of two regions, the easternmost regions of Ukraine, Donetsk and Luhansk, where those pro-Russian local activists are joined by people who infiltrate from Russia with guns, with funding from oligarchs close to the Kremlin, with people who served for many years in the Russian military and the Russian security services, and they start an uprising. And the key, you're right, the story on the ground was confusing. We couldn't, as it was happening, it was really hard to make sense of who is local, who is Russian, because they all spoke the same language. You know, Russians obviously concealed their presence there, but over time it became very clear that yes, there were local protests and locals who wanted to become Russia, but without this Russian mercenaries, adventurous nationalists who started and came with guns, connections and money, and started an uprising, and then were followed by the Russian army itself, the government in Kyiv would have been more than capable of putting those local protests down. So it's a mix of local protest and Russian invasion.
The book is Intent to Destroy. Eugene Finkel is the author. Russia's 200-year quest to dominate Ukraine. When we come back, Volodymyr Zelensky. Who is he? What do we need to know? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.